on December 15th. And you might ask, well, why are you doing that today, since December 15th begins the Jewish festival of Hanukkah? Some of you, particularly your visitors, may be wondering why I'm doing this at all, you know. I'll tell you. Number one, it's always important that we understand what our Jewish friends are doing or will be doing. But then, I'm doing this because our passage today in Daniel, can you believe? In Daniel has to do with Hanukkah, and I thought it would be, oh boy, I thought it would be good to use this as a teaching device. Let me just let you in on a little secret. I spend almost as much time thinking about how I'm going to present a lesson as I do in studying for the content of that lesson. And as I looked at this difficult, unfamiliar passage, I thought, how am I going to get across to these sojourners the significance of this passage in Daniel chapter 11? It's dense. It's unfamiliar. It's dealing with language that has to be unpacked and explained. It's prophecy, but yet it's talking about things in prophecy that, I'm not going to say that prayer all over again, you know. Okay, good. I'm not going to say it all over again. So anyway, if it goes out, that's all right. So I said, well, how am I going to present this? So I thought, well, this really is a prophecy about Hanukkah. So why don't we just sort of like try to grab their attention? Do I have your attention? Did it work? Some of you are nervous. Some of you are calling, you know, the security for, you know, fire code violation. Dumas very sourly says as he's leaving the platform, oh, violation of the fire code. You know, Anyway, so I don't think it's a violation. If the security comes and pulls me off, gives me the hook, pulls me off, you'll know. Jewish people on December 15th will be doing what we're going to be doing today, talking about the events of Hanukkah. So I thought, well, that's the best way to sort of like bring it all up to current time and talk about the Jewish people. And you say, well, okay, well, what's that got to do with us? Well, stay tuned. It's got to do with us in far more ways than you realize. I say us, we who are believers. It's got far more to do with us than you may ever realize, Hanukkah. But that I'll leave that for the end. Now, Daniel chapter 11, verses 2 through 35 is our consideration for this morning. As I said, it's a very dense passage. It is one of the least preached on passages in all of Daniel. Preachers like to leapfrog over 10 to get to, leapfrog over 11 to get to 12, or at least leapfrog over part of 11 to get to the eschatology section of it. I'm going to leapfrog over verses 1 to 20. Because it would take a gargantuan effort on my part and probably far more sanctification than I'll ever get to go through and help you to understand all the details of verses 1 to 20. Let me tell you basically what they say. Now, from Alexander to Antiochus. Number one, who's Alexander? Number two, who's Antiochus? Well, we're going to very quickly just tell you that after the conqueror of the then known world, Alexander, died, his kingdom, which included the land of Judea, which had formerly been under the Persian control. We're talking about the days of the end of the Old Testament, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, that time, the time of Zerubbabel and particularly Ezra. The Old Testament ends with the Persians ruling over God's people. And then that's the end of the Old Testament, Malachi. And then we open up the New Testament in Matthew. Who's ruling over the Jewish people in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? The Romans. You know. Where did they come from? What happened? There were actually about 400 years between Malachi and Matthew, roughly speaking. And during that time, lots happened. And Daniel 11 tells us in detail in a prophecy about a lot of that that's going to happen, that did happen exactly the way it said it would happen. Now, Alexander's kingdom broke up into four kingdoms. Two of them are the most important to Bible students. The kingdom in the south, Egypt, and the kingdom vis-a-vis Judea in the north, which would be Syria. After the dust settled because his successors and generals fought among themselves, there was a ruling dynasty in the north, that is Syria, called the Seleucids. And then in the south, there were the Egyptians. And who gets a free donut? If the ones in the north were called the Seleucids, the one in the south were called the Ptolemies. Von, you get a donut. All right, good. All we have left is bagels. Oh, yes, Jewish bagel. Yeah, right. Actually, no. Jews don't eat bagels at Hanukkah. They eat potato pancakes. So you get a potato pancake. How's that? All right, good. They call them latkes. Yeah. And we're going to see, but why do they eat potato pancakes? Greasy latkes. We'll talk about that. Now, in Israel, however, I'm getting ahead of myself, they eat actually donuts. They do. They at Hanukkah, and we'll ask, why do they eat donuts? And there's a connection with Hanukkah in that regard. So that's what you get. All right. My students in Old Testament survey class, when I ask them a question and they get something, they get a mocha frappuccino from Starbucks. You get a donut, a greasy donut. Okay, good. So that's the Ptolemies in the south, the Seleucids in the north, the Ptolemies in the south, and they're going back and forth, and little Israel is the volleyball that they're kicking back and forth. Israel's right in the middle. Boom, and it gets bumped by the Seleucids in the north, and it gets bumped by the Ptolemies in the south, and little Judea, God's people, goes back and forth and back and forth. When they're under the Ptolemies, are you aware that Cleopatra was a Ptolemy? Are you aware that Cleopatra was not an Egyptian? She was a Greek? Oh, come on. That's right. She's a descendant of Ptolemy, who was a Greek general. I don't know who had the funny line back there. I'm sorry I missed it. Okay. Anyway. All right. Now, come on. Get serious. I'm losing you. It's all my fault. All right. The Judeans, the Jewish people, are bounced back and forth between Syria and Egypt, the Ptolemies in the south, and the Seleucids in the north. And generally speaking, when they were ruled over by the Ptolemies, that is the Egyptians, they had religious toleration. But there came along a guy named Antiochus, and that's who we're going to focus in on, first of all, who persecuted them unmercifully, just horribly. Out of that persecution came the festival of Hanukkah. And the wonderful thing about it is, it's not just history, it's prophecy. Daniel 11:21 tells us about that. Okay? So how do we get through that? Hasmoneans and Hanukkah. Hasmoneans was the family name of the Jewish people that rose up against the persecutor Antiochus, and hence we get the Jewish festival of Hanukkah. Now, first of all, in 11:21-32 is a description of the persecution of the Jewish people, and the reason we have these up here is that sometimes there's names and there's dates that you may not be able to get down in the notes, that if you can see them on the screen, it helps. The persecution by a man named Antiochus Epiphanes, and with his defiling of the temple. Now, follow me, chapter 11, verse 21. Patience. Okay, good. 11:21. Again, just you got to trust me because we're jumping right in the middle of a very historical passage here. But in verse 21 is where we first get a reference to this wicked man, Antiochus Epiphanes. In his place, a despicable person will arise. I told my wife this morning, I said, I'm going to teach from the New American Standard Bible today. This passage is going to be hard enough to understand, so I think most of the people have NASBs, so at least it'll be the similar language. In his place, a despicable person, great translation, will arise, on whom the honor of kingship has not been conferred, but he will come in a time of tranquility and seize the kingdom by entry. Antiochus was not the one in line to be king when his father died, but through duplicity and his brother being out of the country, Antiochus wangled his way into the kingship. That's what verse 21 says. Said would happen. Verse 22, the overflowing forces will be flooded away before him and shattered. Also, the prince of the covenant. Prince of the covenant. We see the word covenant, it's probably going to refer to the Jewish covenant. There was a Jewish prince who was deposed by this wicked man, Antiochus Epiphanes, and he was eventually murdered. That's what that refers to. When he began to take over Judea, the legitimate high priest, he had deposed and then murdered and then took over. Verse 23, after an alliance is made with him, he will practice deception and he will go up and gain power with a small force of people. In a time of tranquility, he will enter the richest parts of the realm. He will accomplish what his fathers never did, nor his ancestors. He will distribute plunder, booty, and possessions among them, and he will devise his schemes among strongholds, but only for a time. This is talking about his relationship with the king of the south, the Ptolemies. They never got along, but he had some sort of alliance with him. But that's not the end of the story. Verse 25, he will stir up his strength and courage against the king of the south with a large army. So the king of the south will mobilize an extremely large and mighty army for war. But he will not stand, for schemes will be devised against him. Those who eat his choice food will destroy him. His army will overflow, but many will fall down slain. This talks about an initial alliance that Antiochus had with the king of the south, but he broke that alliance and actually attacked his one that was in the treaty with him. Verse 27. As for both those kings, their hearts will be intent on evil. They will speak lies to each other at the same table, but it will not succeed, for the end is still to come at the appointed time. Then he will return to his land, that is Syria, with much plunder, but his heart will be set against what? The Holy Covenant. That's where the Jewish people come in. And he will take action and then return to his land. It's interesting that the notes in the MacArthur Study Bible give you some more details as to exactly how this worked out, but I want to get to my main text. All right, so that's his first invasion of the south. Now again, verse 29, at the appointed time, he, that is, this Antiochus Epiphanes, will come into the south, that is Egypt, but this last times it will not turn out the way it did before. He was successful in his invasion of the south. Again, you know, Israel's right in the middle here. Antiochus is rumbling over Israel to get to the south. He comes back through Israel. So they're always right in the way of these kings that are external to them. Israel's caught up in this. But this time he goes south and invades Egypt. It will not turn out the way it did before. Before he was successful in his invasion. But look at verse 30. For ships of Kittim will come against him. Kittim is the ancient Hebrew word for Cyprus. Roman troops were stationed on Cyprus. We know, according to history, that when he came down there this time, Roman troops who had been stationed in Cyprus were sent down to Egypt to intercept him and say, no, 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 you're not going to do this. It says, therefore he will be disheartened and will return. Actually, the books of Maccabees and Josephus tells us exactly what happened. Antiochus came down to beat up on Egypt again, and in his way is a Roman centurion who leads his legions out against him and confronts Antiochus on the border of Egypt and says, stop. We're in control now. Rome is now starting to become what would later become the vast Roman Empire and rule all the then known world. But at this time, they're just now starting to flex their muscles in the east. And they're in Egypt. And they don't like this Antiochus Epiphanes running roughshod. They want to be in control. So basically, history tells us that the Roman centurion said, you are not going to go into Egypt. Go back where you came from. Go home. We're in control of Egypt now. Now, Antiochus was smart enough not to fight against the Romans at this time. But he said, well, let me think about it. And the Roman centurion, we're told, in Polybius, in his history, says, okay, I hope I don't knock this over. Good. You look like a good Antiochus. Yeah, come on, come on, come on. You look like a good Antiochus. Come on up here. Okay, you think you're such a big guy?
You bigger want? Than you.
Yes, it's true. You are. But I got a big army behind me, and you are not going to go any further. And if you want some time to make up your mind, I'll give you time. And so he took his staff and drew a circle around Antiochus and says, guess what, buddy? Make your decision before you leave that circle, okay? Antiochus begins to pray about this and reconsider his decision. And finally, wisely, he says, okay, you win. I'll go back. Okay, go back. That's exactly what happened. Make your decision before you step outside the circle. In other words, you better make it soon. He did. He was frustrated by the might of Rome. So he heads back to Syria. That is back up to the north. I'm not going to take the risk and hold it. Hold that, please, sweetheart. Okay, good. And he's upset. He's angry. He's frustrated. He's not going to be able to conquer Egypt. But what country does he travel back through when he's headed up to Syria? Israel, Judea. And he's angry and he takes out his anger on them. And Daniel said that would take place. He will return, verse 30, and become enraged at the Holy Covenant and take action. So he will come back and show regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant. Forces from him will arise, desecrate the sanctuary fortress, and do away with the regular sacrifice. Do away with the regular sacrifice. And they will set up the abomination of desolation. By smooth words, he will turn to godlessness those who act wickedly toward the covenant. Now look up from there, right in the middle of the verse. These verses tell us what will take place. Now remember, This is not history. This is prophecy. Daniel was given a picture of what would take place hundreds of years after he wrote this down. And guess what? What we know from history fits this like a glove. We do know that when he went back, he was so angry he took out his frustration on the Jewish people. And what did he do? Well, we are told in the books of 1st and 2nd Maccabees, which are preserved as apocryphal books written between the Testament, and Josephus, the Jewish historian who records what he did. He went back and began to slaughter the Jews. Oh, he gave them an opportunity to not be slaughtered. He said, you've got to forsake Israel. You've got to forsake the covenant with your God. You've got to worship in his place Zeus, the god of the Greeks. And he set up idols of Zeus at all of the holy sites in Israel, particularly the most holy site, the temple. He went into the Holy of Holies and set up an idol of Zeus. And contemporary writers say it was an idol whose face strangely resembled Antiochus himself. In other words, the man was a madman who believed he was Zeus manifest. As a matter of fact, Antiochus Epiphanes means Antiochus the manifest one. He was the manifestation of Zeus. And so in worshiping Zeus, actually he was asking people to worship himself in the place of Zeus. He takes the altar where holy sacrifices have been given for years, and he takes an unclean animal, a sow, and he kills the sow and spreads the blood on the altar. Not only defiling the altar by a pagan offering a sacrifice on it, but offering deliberately an unclean animal to snub the Jews, to humiliate them. And then he demanded worship of himself. There were some who went along with it. He flattered those. Notice, he will flatter those who will forsake the Holy Covenant. Those who proved unfaithful to their God, he actually commended and encouraged and rewarded, but those who stayed firm to their covenant with their God, he persecuted. Verse 31, forces from him will arise, desecrate the sanctuary fortress, do away with the regular sacrifice, and will set up the abomination of desolation. Now, Jesus said in Matthew 24, when you shall therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, well, was Antiochus the abomination of desolation, or will that still be future? We're going to talk about that next week as we look at verse 36 and following. But what Antiochus did became a type of what the Antichrist will do in a rebuilt Jewish temple. I'll just say that for now. Save more for that for next week. Verse 32, by smooth words he will turn to godlessness those who act wickedly toward the covenant, making promises. This was actually the first religious persecution in history. You say, oh, come on. People had died before then. Yes, but this was the first time of a religious persecution that people died because they were observing a faith, a religion. The ancient world was amazingly tolerant. The Romans said, you want your God, have your God, Jehovah, Shemahovah, who cares? Just pay your taxes and don't rebel and you can worship your God. Antiochus didn't do that. The Jews could live under his control but still have freedom to worship God. That was taken away. It became a crime to possess a copy of the Torah. It became a crime to circumcise your male children. It became a crime to observe the Sabbath. As a matter of fact, one of the things that the dirty dog did is that somebody, one of the informers, one of the apostate Jews said, you know what? They don't fight on Saturday. Attack them on Saturday. Wait. So they waited Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and here came Saturday. And they attacked them, and they slaughtered this huge army who of Jews who wouldn't even defend themselves on the Sabbath. Interesting. After that, the rabbis got together and said, you know what? We better, talk about this. Because the word's going to get out that all of our enemies are going to just wait till the Sabbath, and they're just going to slaughter us. So they made a decision, which is operative even until today with the Israeli armies, that they don't normally attack on the Sabbath, but they can defend themselves on the Sabbath. Or else, our enemies are going to just wait till Saturday, 6 days a week, keep them in camp, and seventh day, attack them. Yeah, that would be, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Attack your enemies, and they just say, kill us, So they rethought that strategy. But that was the type of guy he was. Well, in the midst of all this, the Jewish people could come to an end. It could come to a room and to a complete end. Hanukkah is observed for 8 days, beginning on the 25th day of the Jewish month of Kislev. And it all relates to what happened after this. Beginning in verse 32b, we see the response by a group of godly, deeply devoted Jews who fought back. 32b. But the people who know their God will display strength and take action. The old King James says, the people who know their God will be strong and do exploits. I love that. There were some God-fearing individuals. Their family name was the Hasmoneans. Their nickname was the Maccabees. Maccabees is actually a nickname. It was originally given to the son who was the fiercest warrior of the five sons of a man named Mattathias. His name was Judah. And he was such a fierce warrior that he got the nickname Judah the Maccabee, which translates in Hebrew, Judah the Hammer. I remember there used to be a defensive back for the Oakland Raiders named Fred Williamson, and they called him the Hammer. Remember him? Because he would slam against running backs so hard that he got that nickname, the Hammer. Well, Judah was such a warrior and fought so hard that he got the nickname Judah the Hammer. And so that's the nickname. But the family name is the Hasmonean. The Hasmonean. Was originally an old man who started the rebellion. His five sons joined him in the little town of Modi'in, about 18 miles west of Jerusalem. Why would somebody say about 18? 18 miles west of Jerusalem. You say about 15 or about 20. It's about 5,280 feet or something. It's 5,280 feet, that's in a mile. All right, so 18 miles west of Jerusalem, the rebellion began. It began as a guerrilla warfare. These were not soldiers. These were not the Judean army. They weren't even allowed to have an army. These were guerrilla fighters who began to strike against the Syrian troops in guerrilla-style tactics. Not being taken seriously at the beginning, but finally Antiochus realized he had a major war on his hands. And then it was too late. In about 3 years, they recaptured the temple. Look at verse 33. Those who have insight among the people will give understanding to the many, yet they will fall by sword and flame, by captivity, by plunder for many days. Now when they fall, they will be granted a little help, but many will join them in hypocrisy. Some of those who have insight will fall in order to refine, pure, and make them pure until the end time. Because it is still to come at the appointed time. This cryptic language was fulfilled when these men, the Hasmoneans, fought against the Syrians. They were joined by pious people who loved God. Those ones who were abstaining from fighting on the Sabbath finally realized that that was not the best military move, and they joined the Maccabees. And so it truly was a God-fearing group of men and women. God-fearers. And they are considered in Judaism as great heroes. I believe they're referred to in Hebrews chapter 11. Because in Hebrews chapter 11, you see some unnamed people. And the suffering that many went through, you can't find any description like that in the Old Testament of these people in Hebrews chapter 11. In case you're wondering, look at this. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Some of them are named. Verse 32, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah. Verse 34, quench the power of fire, escape the edge of the sword, from weakness remain strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. We can find all of those mentioned somewhere in the Old Testament. But beginning at verse 35, women received back their dead by resurrection. Others were tortured, not accepting their release, so that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others experienced mockings and scourging, yet also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins, goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and ill-treated, men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. Many of the experiences described in those verses can't be traced to somebody in the Old Testament, but they describe to a T some of the sufferings of these godly people. Second Maccabees 6 and 7 has a couple of heart-rending chapters about the martyrs who died for their faith at this time, approximately 166, 165 B.C. How many of you ever heard of the book Fox's Book of Martyrs? Written by a great Puritan clergyman, John Fox, describing particularly the martyrs who had died during the reign of Queen Mary, but he went all the way back and described the martyrs from the early church up to his time. The classic book. In the original edition of Acts and Monuments, as it was called, the first chapter of Fox's Book of Martyrs were on these people right here who died for their faith. Rather than give up their faith, they died for their faith rather than worship Zeus in the person of Antiochus Epiphanes. And John Fox describes them. Actually, they're called in Christian history the martyrs before the martyrs, because we normally think about the martyrs in the early Christian church. These were Jewish martyrs before the Christian martyrs. Well, how does this all relate to this? My candle's burning down here, and my helpers are getting itchy. There's not going to be much candle left unless I get them up here, okay? So let's talk about this, all right? What happened? Finally, they recaptured the temple. The place was a mess. They began to clean it up, and they wanted to light the menorah, the seven-branch candelabra in the temple. But you needed special oil, kosher oil. Oil that had been prepared according to the regulations. And they only found a cruse of oil for enough for one day. And somebody says, use it, we'll see what happens. And the story, the tradition, is that one cruse of oil, only enough for one day, lasted 8 days until they could get some other oil in. Now, I don't mean to shatter your conceptions, but that's not in Daniel 11. It's not in 1st or 2nd Maccabees. It's not even in Josephus. It's a tradition. It's a tradition. It's not even there. But, you know, you historians who always want to revise my good feelings about George Washington and the cherry tree and all of that, you who want to tell me facts, please indulge me and let me have a few traditions. I love that story about the cherry tree. I'm looking at my friend. So I don't mean to shatter your ideas about this, but it's a tradition. And then Tevye, he says, how do we get these traditions? I'll tell you. I don't know. But by our traditions, who we know who we are and what God expects of us. But no, I won't do that. I won't. I'll spare you that. All right, good. All right, good. So, what's the tradition? The tradition is commemorated for 8 nights in a row. I got you. Thank you, honey. All right, we've got a replacement here. All right. To commemorate the tradition that the menorah oil of only one day lasted for 8 days. Jewish people, one candle each night for 8 nights celebrates Hanukkah. Now, Hanukkah in Hebrew means dedication. So it commemorates the rededication of the temple to God when God gave them that great victory. And so the children look forward to it. And each night they light one candle. Hebrews read from right to left, so they start on the right and go all the way to the left. And we're going to have 8 children, or all children under 12. Maybe, you know, we'll leave it to the adults to think about the minimum age. Anyway, but all children under 12. Come on up here. I need some help. I need some volunteers. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Here's one. Come on. Here's another one. Come on. Step right up. Some of oh, yes, yes. Good, good. Come on up here. Great. 1, 2. There's 8 nights of Hanukkah, not 3. Okay. All right. We're going to need a few more above. Thank you. Come on up here. Your name is... Your name is Moshe, right? Moshe. All right. Come on over here. Okay, we're going to need some 12, 13, 14. Come on. Come on. 12, 13, 14. All right. All right. We got any 21-year-old kids? Okay, good. Any other teenagers? All right, good. Come on up here. Come on up here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right. We got 3 more teenagers. 6. Come on, Robin. Good. 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 1, 2. Okay, very good, very good. Okay, good. Now, we're going to have our first one. On the first night of Hanukkah, I want you to light that candle right there. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu, Melech Ha'olam. Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvotav. I won't say this all the time. Avitzivanu L'hadlik Ner Shel Hanukkah. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctified us by your commandments and commanded us to light the Hanukkah light. So one night, one candle each night. So now you take the second one and light that, and you can sit down. Okay? They go through the second night, and obviously the children love this. What is it about fire that children love? Okay, just stick it right there. We'll get it. We'll get it. All right. Thank you very much. What's your name? Joshua, good Jewish name, Joshua. Third night. Do you ever feel sad for Jewish kids at Christmas when they don't have Christmas presents, don't feel sad for them. Some of these American kids get gifts all 8 nights. Thank you. Thank you. Fourth night. Does he look Jewish? Fifth night. Thank you. Sixth night. Donuts. Latkes. Dreidels, yes. Thank you. Well, hello. Keep going. Thank you. Thank you. Nice little Jewish quail. And now Robin.
Reuben,
yes. Thank you very much. This candle is called the servant candle, the shamas. And with this candle, they light each of the other 8 candles. And they recount the great deliverance that God made, not just a military victory, but over unbelievable odds, God gave these men of faith the victory. Now, a dreidel, yes, yes. You know what? I believe Jewish holidays are for kids, and adults are invited. Passover, Hanukkah. You know, and the adults are invited, but it's for the kids. Add visual aids to teach them about their history. Okay? And then they eat. You know, I said before, Jewish holidays. You can sum them up. You know, it's, a Jewish comedian said this. I think it was, I forgot who it was. You know, half of comedians are Jewish anyway, but he says, Jewish holiday, it's very simple. They tried to kill us. They failed. Let's eat. You know. Something to that when you look at Jewish holiday. And so they eat potato pancakes or latkes. Why that? Because they are fried in oil. Fried in oil. Oil for the lamp. In Israel, greasy donuts. Why? Because they are fried in oil. That's the connection with those two. The dreidel is simply a spinning top game, a little sort of like gambling game that commemorates 4 Hebrew letters on the top that says in Hebrew, in English, a great miracle happened there. Nes gadol po sham. Okay, I mean hayasham. Okay, so that's that. Now, you may be wondering, okay, so it's very interesting. What's it all got to do with us? Hanukkah and Christians. It does have something to do with us. And I hope you won't forget this. Number one, John 10, 22 to 42 records an important event in the ministry of Jesus during Hanukkah. Good translations will translate Hanukkah, but those, oftentimes your translation will have dedication. Jesus was in Jerusalem at the dedication, observing Hanukkah, and he was under Solomon's portico when he made one of the greatest statements of his identity with the Father, I and my Father are one. That's the great statement at Hanukkah. So Jesus, John acknowledged that Jesus was there. And it says it was winter, and, you know, December 15th is getting mighty close to winter, so it has the ring of truth to it. But let me close with this. If there had been no Hanukkah, there would have been no Christmas. Think about that. If Antiochus was successful, then the Jewish people would have disappeared. They would have been caught up so much into paganism that their loyalty to God would have ended, and they would have just been like all the other nations, and there would have been no Jewish town of Bethlehem, and no Jewish girl named Miriam to become pregnant in fulfillment of a prophecy by a Jewish prophet, Isaiah. Think about it. Somebody said, oh, it would have happened anyway. It would have been predestined. Oh, the Calvinists we always have with us. Okay, Mr. Calvinist, it was predestined, but then you must also say that Hanukkah was predestined too. So I got an answer for you. Got an answer for you. Oh, yes, in the plan of God, of course, the Savior would have come. But He is the sovereign God who prepares all the events for His Son to come. And part of that was preserving the Jewish people and raising up these great godly men who believed by faith that they were not going to compromise, but follow the Lord, even if they had to take up arms, and they did. So we as Christians who believe in the Nativity ought to be thankful also for Hanukkah, that in the providence of God, God raised up these great individuals and in fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy. Our Father, we thank You for Your Word. Thank You for these precious children. May we learn, whether we're our young children or old children, through these visual aids of what You did at that time. We thank You for the Savior who you were preparing to come even through these events. In Jesus' name, amen.